turn the circle into a long and big and technically heavy affair. And I'm going to use DeWitt and Laplacian for this noble goal. And so as I explained yesterday, the Morse theory counting the critical points is related to the study of the low-lying eigenvalue of the following differential operator, squared, minus h f double prime equal to zero. Sorry, maybe I should just try it. Psi equal to e psi, where psi will depend on x and h, like this. Because now I'm going to, from philosophy, I'm going to go down to business, specific setup, I want this to be happening on a circle. So that means that x is in R over z. And I want psi to satisfy periodic boundary conditions. On psi. And I want f to be a generic enough trigonometric polynomial. How generic, I'll explain later in the polynomial. Real polynomial, and of course I want it to be Morse, in particular Morse. Plus a little bit more. Okay, so and I'm going to study this operator by methods of complex WKB, and I'm going to be interested in low-lying eigenvalues. Low-lying means e to the power e goes as something like minus real constant divided by h, and h is a formal parameter now. And because I have such a situation, because it has to be exponentially small, in particular, I can write e equal to h e reduced. And so e reduced will be, this, but in particular, I can just say that I should think of it as O of h. So I can think of those eigenvalues of the size h squared, and then through the analysis, they will be automatically, and then I will prove that they are exponentially small. So slight change in the notation, psi xh, and then h er psi xh. So the goal of this whole business is to get solutions. Well, I want to get the eigenvalues, and I want to get the eigenfunctions in the form, or at least representable in the form, ER will be of this form, and PsiXH should be of the same form, but X dependent. So ER, reduced eigenvalues, would have to be represented, hopefully. This is the initial hope. We will show that how this hope will have to be modified. But so it would have to be represented as a sum of discretely many, meaning no accumulation point of this. And hopefully, but this hope will fail, power series expansion in H. So, and then CXH would have to be representable in the same form, but X dependent. And as you already know from the theory of the Stokes phenomenon, we cannot expect that, we should expect that the domain of X would have to be split into Stokes region. In an every Stokes region, there would be an expression like that, X dependent, and across the boundaries of the Stokes regions, those expansions will jump discontinuously. Anyway, this is our goal. Now, how should I think of such expressions? So resurgent, and the reason why I started looking at resurgent analysis or complex WKB, so I know that these are slightly different topics, but I'll use them interchangeably, was because I wanted these expressions in my world. So this is slightly different to what Iwaki-san was saying, telling us, because he was considering the problem. He would take a Schrodinger equation, much like that type, and he would study formals. So he would consider a WKB solution of power series expansion, and he would consider the properties of analytic continuation, Borel summability, etc. So I will have to use the setup that is based in its core on the same ideas, but as a setup, it will be different. The setup is, I've taken it from two sources. One source is the French book Candelperger, Nomad Femme. I don't know if I pronounced the names correctly. Approche de la Resurgence. And I've taken it from a literature by Russian authors Shatalov and Sternin, also on resurgence. Then what I'm presenting is a mongrel of those two terminologies because, well, none of them alone suits my purposes. I'm going to give a definition of resurgent function. Actually, Candelperger Nomad Femme would call it extended resurgent function, but well, for me, it's a resurgent function. Phi of h, it would be phi of h. So what is this? So first of all, and I don't want to write out the words, I'll just write down keywords. Sectorial germ. So I take sectors around zero, let's say in a positive real direction. Direction can change, but let's say positive real. Around zero, germ means as usual, restrict the sector. If the two of them overlap, it's we mean the same object. Of exponential growth, as h goes to zero, right? Of no more than exponential growth, right? Now, why resurgent function is not a function? Modular terms of sub-exponential growth. And then the final, the word resurgence, is that phi of h is equal to e minus s over h psi of s ds, and then psi endlessly analytically continuum. Endlessly analytical continuable roughly means that there is no natural boundary. Singularities don't get dense on any particular sheet. So you will get the picture that one should think about is that psi is a very transcendental, not an algebraic function with many, many sheets and many, many singularities. Once you project all the singularities down to the complex plane of S, you will probably get an everywhere dense set. So one should not think of it as a Riemann surface of anything algebraic. Otherwise you get just the two poor family of objects. So n gamma, gamma is a contour like this. So on the first sheet, we will assume that, turns out without loss of generality, we assume that all singularities are contained in the sector. And contour gamma goes like this, and all singularities are here. Okay, so once again, stress, this is not it is still a formal object, just like a power series is a formal object, right? When you take a power series, you kind of think that you're dropping everything that's smaller than any power of your formal parameter. You are dropping everything that is smaller than anything that is minus constant divided by h. Okay, so for me, this is the resurgent function. So when I started working on this, as I was working on this, I realized that the foundational questions of endless analytical continuability are not yet resolved. So I had no choice but to work modular some black boxes in the theory that are being slowly fixed by other people. Anyway, so this is the definition. So now how does this give us that? So I would like to also stress the two things that this setup is, the two difficulties that this setup is isolating. First of all, I don't assume anything about the growth of the function along the contour gamma. So what means this integral, I will say in a moment. And the second, I don't have to assume anything about the singularities, which is also turns out to be a welcome thing. Anyway, so let us slowly work out from this to that. So first of all, about the growth conditions. So in Kandel-Pergen Amafam, approche de la resurgence, there is a theorem that says that this sort of object correspond. I will be a little bit sloppy because I don't want to discuss the angle of this sector and angle of that sector. So this is the thing. Let's suppress it. I mean, it's not hard, but let's suppress it. So that this kind of object correspond to functions psi, which are endlessly these functions. Analytically continuable, modula the functions that are entire in the whole complex plane. All right. So the fact that here, so the condition of what they call Borel's immobility, which more or less amounts to no more than exponential growth here, is suppressed in the following way. So if you it turns out it's a theorem. It's not very hard, but it's an epsilon delta argument. So given a path with some mild conditions and given a function like this, well, don't even need that. That is analytic along the path. This is not needed. You can correct it by an entire function such that, that along that path, the growth will be smaller than anything that you want, right? So you can take a function, grows arbitrarily badly at infinity, correct it by an entire function, and you will make this integral converge. Okay? So what it does, it in the sense of Adam Smith, it separates the tasks, divides the labor between people who can apply this theory to specific problems, specific equations, and people or tasks when you fight for the foundational equations of Borel's immobility. I find it very convenient. I don't think many other people like it, this approach, but I like because it divides the two tasks. All right, so the next question, so how do you come from here to there? So under good circumstances, well, you pretty much already see in my picture, and this picture appears in the first or second paper of Voros, first or second page of Voros paper. Well, so here's what you do. You deform this contour, hang it on the singularities, and then you assume that the singularities are nice. In particular, it would be something like logarithm times. So the jumps would be the jumps would be power series in this case in this variable s. And then you can apply the stationary phase, Watson's lemma, formal integration. So to take one of those jumps, integrate and get the jth term here. So you're integrating not this function c, but you're integrating the jump. And jump does not change if you modify the function by any entire function. So there is a little bit of something involved here. First of all, this does not have yet, because we are, this doesn't yet have an analytic meaning. Right, so I cannot really say in which I cannot say in the epsilon delta language in which that would give this squiggle, will give this a meaning for the squiggle sign. However, the way I think about it is the following. So what makes full mathematical sense is that you have a class of singular function modular entire functions, and then you can formally take the sum of singularities, right? Once you formally take the sum of singularities, and if the singularity is good enough, you represent it in such a form. However, as we will see later, singularity and in Iwaki-san's talk, these were the extensions that we were working with. Within Laplacian study of this thing, forces us more general singularities. You will see how they appear. So, however, this idea that, well, it's a little bit maybe too abstract for analysis perspective, but nevertheless, for algebraics and geometers should be fine. You take a function, you represent it as a formal sum of singularity, done. So this is the mathematical meaning of this expression. I cannot write once again because of this and because of that. Of this, I cannot write it really in the epsilon delta language. Or yeah. Okay, so these are resurgent functions. Resurgent functions give us the setup in which we can look for eigenvalues and for eigenfunctions of this equation. Okay, so before we go a little bit further, so once again, maybe I'm overstressing this point, but let me give you an example of resurgent function that are resurgent function in this setup and were not resurgent function maybe in Iwaki-san's talk. Is a resurgent function? Why not? I mean, it can be represented in this form. Is a resurgent function? Okay. Right? Gives me a richer theory. All righty. The next portion of my exposition is very standard. So how do you, given such an equation, how do you, given such an operator, how do you solve it for eigenvalues? Pretty much again, building on the expositions of the beginning of the conference. The idea is simple. So here I have periodic boundary conditions. People usually study conditions from minus infinity to plus infinity. Does not really change anything conceptually. But so you take, let's say, I'm going to be a little bit sloppy with notation. There are little details that one should be a little bit more careful. But nevertheless, you'll take the. So first of all, you complexify this guy. It becomes a cylinder, right? So complex plane of X becomes a cylinder, right? So still, I can also think of it as a complex plane of X. I take X equal to 0, which I assume not to be a turning point. X equal to 1, not to be a turning point. Then I will draw the Stokes curves for this equation. So I will draw it correctly in a moment. Now I'll just draw incorrectly to illustrate the principle. Okay. This is incorrect picture. This is serves the purpose of illustrating. So here I take the two formal WKB solutions, C plus, C minus, formal solutions. Then I start analytically continuing them. So here I will think of my actual solution, actual resurgent solution as represented as A plus C plus, plus A minus C minus. Every time, and then I will analytically continue. Every time I encounter a Stokes curve, I recalculate this expansion by the formulas given in Iwaki-san's talks. Here, analytically continue the new linear combination here. So I will have a matrix that is A plus, how should I write it best? Or maybe this way. Just a second. I think that would be a good notation. Shout if I'm confused. So I'll take this row vector. I'll take this column vector in the first Stokes region where I have x0. And then once I get there, I will have C plus C minus, but it's going to be C plus here. Sorry for notation, but it's C plus at 0, C minus at 0. And here will be C plus at 1, I understand the shortcomings of notation, but psi minus et here, just by analytical continuation of the formal solution, then there will be connection matrices from one Stokes region to the other. I don't know, C1, 2, supposed to be some sort of 2x2 matrix. Wrong. C1, 2 would have to be, this is the Stokes region 1, this is the Stokes region 2, this is the Stokes region 3. Connection matrix along this Stokes line, etc., however many there are. And again, A plus A minus. So this would have to be equal. And so the question, if you play a little bit, after a couple of trivial lines, we see that we will have a condition that, this problem, this Schrödinger equation, will admit a periodic solution if this linear system that we have here, and this is a linear system, admits a non-trivial solution, a non-trivial vector solution, A plus A minus. So this is a sum condition on the determinant of a system, which is an algebraic condition. If that condition is satisfied, then this equation has a solution, and our original equation has a periodic solution. So everything here, so the coefficients of our equation depends on ER. So all ingredients in this equation will depend on ER. And so the condition that of existence of periodic solution becomes a condition on ER, which hopefully can be, if not solved, it can be analyzed. Okay? So standard, this is an absolutely standard picture. Now let's start executing this picture and see what kind of details come about. So first of all, we need a Stokes pattern. I told you F is a trigonometric polynomial. So the potential is F prime, so F prime is also a trigonometric polynomial. So the classical momentum is, depending on your definition, I minus I, but it's the root of the potential. So it is also a trigonometric polynomial, fortunately. Because if it was not a trigonometric polynomial, but would have been something like root of trigonometric polynomial, then we would be running into a possible difficulty of an everywhere dense Stokes pattern. However, this here, it doesn't happen because the Stokes curves are just given by, they're literally given by trigonometric polynomial equal, real part of trigonometric polynomial equal to zero. So Stokes pattern is not everywhere dense. So I will not be interested, at least for computational purposes, it may be important. No, not really. So I will only consider the Stokes pattern along the real part of X because So the turning point are exactly the critical points of F. So, and to fix ideas, I will say that F has local minima and local minima and local maxima, right? It's a function in a circle. From, as we know, as probably was known even before the Morse theory, that minima and maxima come minimum, maximum, right? And they are all on the real line, on the real circle. And the Stokes pattern turns out to be, so if argument of H is equal to zero, the Stokes pattern turns out to be the following, at least on the neighborhood of the real axis. So double turning points, Stokes curves connecting the nearby turning points. All right, so once again, great that we had the first three lectures of this conference, because now I can, without any other any other explanation, tell you that this is bad, at least technically difficult. So in order to make things a little bit less technically difficult, I don't want to have the Stokes curves connecting the turning points. So I'm doing the following thing. I just say that argument of h is equal to 0 plus, or I can just say that this is epsilon greater than 0, but much less than, but very small. And this will change my Stokes pattern with that choice of h into at least something that doesn't have this degeneracy. Right. I hope, no, a little, oh, wait. No, I think it goes like this. Yeah. Okay, at least like that. So you would ask why plus and not minus. And I think that for minus, the whole story will be exactly the same. And you would ask so how are plus and minus related? I haven't studied it, but there is a French author, Frédéric Menou, who has studied this kind of phenomenon a lot. And one would have to read his work in order to even understand maybe. Well, I mean, this is a legitimate question, which I didn't look at. So bear with me for this. So this is what we have. And so the like this. And so the Stokes regions, which I will be connecting, will be this one, this one, this one. Oops, sorry, once again, bad, like this. So I will be connecting not just along across the Stokes curve. I will be connecting across the turning point. Well, they're still nearby Stokes regions. And so this matrix is still can be written. Okay. Next challenge. So what do we do about the connection across the double turning point? In my view, much of the purpose of the works of Kandel-Perregaux and Mafam, in particular the 1993 paper, hyperelliptic curves, and plus and their later paper, I think 1996, I think Henri Pond, where they develop it, much of their purposes is to address, and this playing with the Voris symbols is to address this point, this question, connection against around the double turning point. So last time I talked to Professor Takei from Kyoto about this. I think this is not yet completely mathematically solid, so there is still foundational work to be done. However, there is a good plausibility argument, which carries out to our example, and there is additional work, and so it seems like also part of well-established, but still, I think, non-rigorous theory. However, let us, so far, much of my attempts are just to be able to calculate, and now let's see how the calculation works and what's the plausibility argument that that is behind that. So we want to take a WQB asymptotics here, and we want to get a WQB asymptotics there. The idea is the following. Once again, very good plausibility argument, maybe perhaps not a proof. So we deform, the principal symbol of our equation is just this, right? And that's what creates the double turning points. So now let us take, so instead of taking, instead of taking E equal to H E reduced, we are going to take E, let's say a small positive number. So we are going to deform our equation, and we are going to deform the Stokes pattern from one double point to two simple nearby turning points. This is the reason, of course, that this, in a asymptotic sense, it changes the nature a lot. So what was in the sub-principal symbol now jumps into the principal symbol and deforms a characteristic variety or what you call sometimes spectral curve. Okay. Nevertheless, so bear with me. So there is a little bit of a question of orientation of the cuts and orientations of the Stokes curves. So presenting mathematics with correct plus and minus signs is not my strong point. So let's ignore that the signs for a bit and just get the general picture. So as Iwaki-san explained to us, sometimes if you have a W, well, with the appropriate choice of signs, not always, but with the appropriate choice of signs. So if you have one elementary WQB solution, so something like that, but depending on X, and you want to correctly recalculate this, and you want to see what does the corresponding actual solution, what is it represented like in this Stokes region? So what you need to do is that you take that solution and formally, meaning coefficient by coefficient, analytically continuing along the Stokes line here. And also, I don't know if it was apparent in Iwaki's talk, but you also have to continue it on the other side of the turning point and get here. So if you have complex WKB solution, C plus and C minus, that are equal to one at one at this point. So let me call this X star for now. So if you have C plus such that C plus of X star is equal to one and then C minus equal to one, then the appropriate, then they form the basis of the formal solutions. And then the Stokes coefficient in this basis, the Stokes matrix will be one, one, and I cannot think right now where I should put the coefficient here, but I hope you forgive me. So what do we need? So we take this path. So, but we can also think of this path as a path that goes back to the original point, but on the second sheet and comes back here. So here we should put the formal monodromy of the solution around this loop, which I will just call sigma. And I will use the notation maybe as sigma. So we need to, right? So one of those Stokes coefficients will be the monodromy of the formal solution around such a, it's a loop on the z-plane, but it's not on the loop on the Riemann surface. But okay, this is the coefficient that you take. So here, what does it mean in practice for this kind of, so here, if we want to come from here to there. In this case, with the appropriate orientations of the Stokes curves and thinking through all the signs, what one has to calculate, so the one of the coefficients will be the sum of this guy of analytic continuation along this path and analytic continuation along this path. So you one of the things participating in the final expression will be the formal monodromy along the red path. This formal monodromy along the red path is, well, what happens if E goes to zero? The two singularities pinch this path, right? It means that if you start calculating it, you will have expressions in the formal monodromy of this path that have E and maybe something worse in the denominator. So they are very, very singular in the limit of E goes to zero. It was a conjecture for many years, I think Sato conjecture, that actually with appropriate rewriting, those singularities can be packaged and kind of discussed away. The first readable proof of that is The first proof that I'm able to read and be convinced of that fact is due to Takei. At least that and some other evidence tells us what the coefficient, the connection. So now what one needs to do, one needs to send E to zero, kind of deal with the bad nicely constellation of, with that complicated constellation of singularities in the WQB expressions. And the final answer is going to be that the connection coefficient, it is one of those. I mean, I don't want to bore you with matrices and with where to put what, but So one of the connection coefficients turns out to be the following. EH is, so first of all, if I take this to be X star, if I take, and I'm giving you the answer for this with a Laplacian, for this it's not important, the specific form of this term here is not important, but I just want to give you in that form. So if this is one of those zeros of the potential, so then here the form that we get for one of those connection coefficients is this, fx. So here, once again, sorry, the specific fact that we're working with the written Laplacian is not important here. I want, however, to give you the form of delta 1 plus 1 half h minus s delta 1, and then power series expansion in h and e. So maybe I should just say 1. I don't remember if it's 1. I hope it's 1. Plus, let's say a 1 e h plus something like this. So delta 1, so if you have those two turning points, delta 1 is this cycle. Again, so I might be missing a little bit but on the orientation, but at least I will tell you conceptually what it is. So yeah, once again, for the fifth time, sorry for not keeping track of the signs, I just not what I'm able to on the board. So so this is a formal monodromy along such a cycle. Okay, so now our friends algebraic geometers should heavily disapprove of this expression for the following reason. So here, S delta 1 contains expressions like ER divided by H. Or let's say, no, even not. Even if so, if S, let me maybe say, so if E is equal to H ER, then this will be a WKB expansion. So it will be depend on ER, but it will be something like, I don't know, A0 of ER plus H A1 ER, well, maybe B, I don't know. But however, it will be a power series expansion in H. This will be H raised to a power series expansion to H. So if you write H to the power something is E to the power log H times the thing, and then you decompose E to the log H times the power series in H, what you will get an expression. Once you write it down as an expansion in H, you will get an expansion involving H, and you will also get H log H. So far, so good, but why is it bad for, well, why do not, I'm sorry, why do algebraic geometers don't like it? Because if you have finite power of log H, you can think, well, it's still an algebra geometric object. This is a monodromy, well, it's related to monodromies of local systems, right? Of D modules. But here you will have H log H to arbitrarily high powers. So that means that once you work with double, and this is a feature that comes from double turning points. If you as soon as you work with double turning points, the appropriate class of expansion is something that, as far as I know, doesn't have an analytic theory of. It has algebraic theory of transseries. It has logicians are interested in, but analysts I don't think have done it yet. But so this will be an expansion. Also, terms log h to the power k will also appear to arbitrary high power of k. Once again, this is a feature of double turning points. So you will two questions. Do log h appear? No. If you have triple turning point, I don't think there is a theory, but there is also no evidence that anything more complicated than h log h appears. So in this world, log h does not seem to appear. All right, anyhow, the whole this setup and this refusal to deal with the power series in the setup also is helpful because this fits my definition of resurgent function.
I have a question.
Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah.
What do you get in terms of the resulting potential? Can you describe in that picture what's happening?
So if you, in the simplest case of harmonic oscillator, if you were working with the potential x squared plus HER, and then once you deform it, you get something like, or minus HER, you get something like minus this. So this is a harmonic oscillator, but at a finite energy.
But that would suggest that there are two zeros of the potential.
Yes, sir. This is one, and this is the other.
Why do you have a third one in the middle?
Oh, it's not a zero. It's just telling you where the zero of the original potential was. I'm sorry. It's a bad picture. It's not a zero of the potential.
Okay, and then your expression for C of B H in the exponential, there's f of x.
J, so this zero of the original potential.
I see. So you're saying that if you simply use the Borel's connection matrices for this example and take the products, then you'll get this expression.
You get the products and the limit in the appropriate sense. Then that's what you get. And to me, this is the point of the 1993 paper of hyperelliptic integrals and resurgence, discussing this formula at least on the level of plausibility. All right. Very good. So this is the types of object that we have to work with. All right. So next step in the analysis is purely algebraic. So we have the connection matrices. We combine them. We write down, equation that I had, this equation. So we notice that all the ingredients of this equation are expressible in the form of the following formal monodromies of the WKB solution. So first of all, I will have those up. Not so good. Let me try again. So I have, overload the picture. So I have those zeros of the potential. So I will have formal monodromies. I don't remember how I denote them in the paper, but formal monodromy of a WKB solution that goes into the turning, in the sense of this limit. If you deform it, it goes between the turning points into the other sheet. Here, I think it's a little vague, but I hope still unambiguous. It goes into the turning point on the second sheet and returns. So let me call them, if this is, I don't know, x1, if this is x2, let me denote this formal monodromy, but tau 1. The other thing that appears are the formal monodromies around each of those turning points. Let's call me just, this is, I don't know if this is x3, let me denote this by mu 3. The formal monodromy on one sheet is something like 1 minus the formal monodromy on the other sheet. So these things, and there is one more loop that participates, this one, the formal monodromy along the cycle kappa. So all of those things can be calculated at least approximately. And so all the matrices, all the expression here is written in terms of taus, mu's, and this kappa. Okay, so now the equation that I'm telling you that the determinant of some matrix is equal to zero. It turns out it looks scary, but it actually is not. Once I had all the ingredients, I did that part in one day. So you have some sort of algebraic, tell me how to call it. It's not a differential equation, it's an algebraic equation, but the function involved are transcendental. So I have that kind of equation in terms of taus, kappas, and mu's that depend on E. And I want to see if it has solutions of this type. So what do? I put all those terms as a Newton polygon. So I take I take Newton polygon. So for all those terms that appear, I take, let's say, maybe in this direction, I will put the degree with respect to ER. Here I put the degree with respect to e to the power minus 1 over h. I put all those terms like this, like this, like this. Get a Newton polygon. Take the take the Newton polygon, meaning the you take the convex hull in this sense. I look at, I call this guy, this vertex of the Newton polygon, to be the leading vertex. I see what it has, what kind of degree it has with respect to ER. Happens to be, as expected, exactly the number n of the local minima and local maxima. Sounds scary, but turned out to be remarkably kind of simple. And then where do I get those E minus C constant divided by H? Well, they are already on the picture. These are the slopes of those edges. And now, well, there can be several edges. I do not require that edges are all of length, horizontal length one. They have to be, can be of higher H, of high length. Yes, sir?
What you're doing now, just to make sure that I understand, is that you're using all those formulas to write the product of the matrices.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at the matrix and trying to write the answer, or you're trying to put it into one big sum.
Yes, I'm putting this, this is an equation of the type determinant of a matrix minus identity equal to zero. This is an algebraic equation. Every term, it consists of infinitely many terms of those guys. I don't remember. So kappa, I think, is 1 plus a term ER times something. So I know the degrees of all terms appearing here, degrees in this variable and degrees in that variable. And to resolve this kind of thing, it just, yeah, this is the method. So, this is the Newton polygon for this equation. I will have an algebraic equation. I don't remember what the equation looked like, but let me just imitate what it's going to be. So, ER cubed plus E minus 2 divided by H, H squared, ER squared, plus E minus 3 divided by H, plus some junk, E minus 153 divided by H, also ER cubed, right? Have many, infinitely many of such terms. And I need to say, so obviously this is a junk. This is, doesn't affect the situation qualitatively. So I would have to maybe solve something like this first and then add that as a perturbation, right? And so first of all, I need the ansatz to start looking for ER in the form E minus some constant divided by H. So where do you get this constant? And then maybe, I don't know, maybe times A, K and A to be determined. K would have to be one of the slopes of this Newton polygon. Then substitute this business in there, solve for A. It might happen that if the length of the edge is more than one, you will be solving an equation of higher order, not just linear, which is fine. What I require, this is my genericity assumption. What I require is that roots are single. I don't want to deal with double roots. Why? Because I don't want to develop the theory, so I have my expansions already fun. They have h log h, but I don't want to have roots of log h there. Or I don't want to study resurgence of the thing that you have a polynomial with multiple roots. Roots can be h's, logs h, and then whether the roots are resurgent. I don't want to do this. This should be done by somebody someday, but not by me and not now. So this is then this non-degeneracy assumption. I don't want the thing corresponding to the edges. Okay, then continue this process, get infinitely many expressions in now. All those expressions, there is a thing called Mittag-Leffler summation. Then you just interpret them as a singularities at a complex plane. There is a way to formally sum them into a function. This is also, I don't think this is very well compatible with Borel summability, but in this setup, formal sums of singularities is a completely allowed thing. And I get a EAE in terms of a resurgent function. I will have E in this sense, and I can think of E as of such a formal sum. Okay? Okay. All right, we found the eigenvalues. Now, in what I was discussing to you about Foucault's conjecture, we need not just eigenfunctions, but we need we don't need just eigenvalues, but we also want the corresponding eigenfunctions. So there is a first little theoretical thing that I would like to mention. So the kind of equation appearing in the Wacky-Sands talk were of the following form. So minus h squared dx squared plus qxh, where the potential was polynomial with respect to h, c equal to 0. However, look, so now you would think, okay, my equation is of this form if ER is a complex number, but ER is no longer a complex number. It's an infinite series of these guys with possibly exponential terms and with possibly all those things. So all the finiteness assumption go down the drain. So to give you a particular example of what the benign example of what can happen, is let's say just this, and then I just write here e minus 5 divided by h c. Okay, so if you it's okay, I'm just it's not going to be scary at the end, but if we just completely naively apply the Laplace transform and get the what kind of equation does it correspond to in the Borel plane, it corresponds to something like that, minus 2 dx squared. This ds can be moved on the other side, so it doesn't become an integral equation. Just think of it as a differential, qx. What does this do? So this would be the Laplace transform of sx, and this would be c s minus 5x. Right, because this just shifts the argument. So it becomes a differential difference equation. So what do we do? About it? So there is a theory that Kandel-Perger Nomafam started. I developed it further in order to fit this example. So it turns out that if you have a what's called small resurgent function, so what's a small, let me just tell you what's a small resurgent function. H is a small resurgent function because it tends to zero if h goes to zero. H log h is a small resurgent function. One is not a small resurgent function. So it's a resurgent function that tends to zero as h goes to zero. Definition is slightly more technical, but so in my treatment, I also allow the functions, well, this function is also a small resurgent function because it tends to zero as h goes to zero. So I had to extend the definition of the small resurgent function in order to allow not just the leading singularities, but also further exponentially subdominant singularities. Anyhow, in this setup, you can substitute small resurgent functions into convergent power series expansions in a parameter. So if you have, the final statement is this. So if you have a resurgent function whose picture in the Borel plane, who has this, it's called major, this has transform in the Borel plane. We assume that the transform in the Borel plane depends analytically on an additional holomorphic parameter. analytically, but singularities do not move. So in other words, we have something psi, S, ER, but the location of singularities doesn't depend on ER. Then in this case, you can take a small resurgence and substitute it into this function instead of ER, and you will get again, you will again get a resurgent function. There is, well, there are some little epsilon delta issues that had to be fixed. Anyhow, what does it mean for our equation? It means that if we solve this equation with ER, a complex number, then at least, come to my next talk, at least there is a very strong reason to believe that, almost certain, that in the Borel plane, the singularities will not depend ER because it does not enter the principal symbol. And therefore, we can substitute any small resurgent function for ER and get a resurgent solution of this equation. All right, having done that, so what's the next step? Next step is a dirty calculation. It's completely complex variable course one. So using that and calculating all those expansions quite precisely, one gets the following picture. So you get your disk, you get your circle from 0 to 1. You get this trigonometric polynomial. You have those critical points of the function f. So where's my Stokes region? Yeah. So we expect that, and from the Stokes picture, we see that once you go to just the real part, you will have a separate expansion of every one of those intervals. And for every value of ER that you calculate from the Newton polygon, again, it's a dirty calculation, it's completely elementary, but quite lengthy calculation. You have those values. For every one of those, you will get an asymptotic expansion. You will get those coefficients that multiply your elementary WKB solutions, and those coefficients will differ from interval to interval. The final point, I mean, it results from a dirty calculation. It sounds a little bit pedantic and bureaucratic, but for me, it's a very important point that if you calculate those ERs and you just calculate them, let's say the leading asymptotic, exponential asymptotic order. If you just say that ER is this plus blah, 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 plus, and just ignore the next terms, then once you start calculating, you will be able to calculate the expansion, well, roughly speaking, here on this interval and on that interval. But once you try to calculate the expansion by use of the Stokes phenomenon connection matrices on the further intervals, things will cancel. So in order to be able to really obtain the global expansion of on all of those Stokes regions, you really need at least one more exponentially subdominant term. So what does it tell us on a philosophical level? That without these techniques of resurgent analysis that allow you to carry around more than just one exponential term, there is no way, there is no thinkable now way to obtain really a global asymptotic expansion for the eigenfunction. And that means, once again, that resurgent analysis or complex WKB is absolutely necessary if you want to do those things. All right, so final comment, and one more minute and we go to for lunch. So it turns out that I wrote down some correlators. And so the next step is to calculate those correlators. The difficulty, it's a doable difficulty. I pretty much know what one needs to do. The leading terms, the main thing that will determine the values of the correlator, will come from integrating functions near the turning points. So I will have two asymptotic expansions. Both of them have discontinuous coefficients tending to the turning point. And I will need to integrate this in order to get something. So it means I will have to deform my situation to the harmonic oscillator, do it correctly, and perform that calculation. So this is the phase in which this, and one needs to be, I think, quite careful in order to just not make conceptual mistakes that will lead to wrong numbers. So this is why I am in this project, and yeah, and here are the issues that I'm encountering. All right.
Write down the product of these matrices.
Yes, sir.
You write down the equation determinant of that minus the identity equal to zero, and you obtain this formula, which you wrote an example of. A formula which involves E on it.
Yeah.
In order to compute the aggregate. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And now you would like to write from that a kind of trans series expansion for ER.
Yes, sir.
So then you can do the sum of that. Get an actual eigenvalue if you were interested in actually computing the eigenvalue.
Yes.
So when you do that and you use that trans series, how do you know what kind of terms you should be allowing? Because you said that you could have h log h terms, and I know it seemed as if you were saying that there were bizarre terms that are going to show up.
Well, there is one way to answer your question and one way to defeat the question by not answering. Let me start with the second. So in my setup, I don't care what kind of singularities. So mathematically, it's valid. All right. So this is defeating the question without answering. Now, trying to answer the question. So in all this calculation, all that comes up is h and h log h. I don't know how to Borel sum that. I don't think there is theory. I don't think I know one author that really does that kind of saddle point expansion in classical analysis. I think the name is Roderick Wong from Hong Kong. He does this kind of expansions. In particular examples, I don't think there is a theory for that. But on the algebraic level, you see only h and h log h and nothing more complicated. Something more complicated might appear if in the degenerate case here, but I excluded this case artificially.